In an assessment of people experiencing homelessness in the Rio Grande neighborhood, from interviews collected by Salt Lake County and the Collective Impact Steering Committee more than a year ago, 72% of participants identified as single men. So it's likely that in Salt Lake City, when you think of someone experiencing homelessness, you might imagine the face of a man you've seen on a street corner. Their stories about becoming homeless range from medical bills they couldn't pay, to mental illness or addiction that prevented them from keeping a job, to a strained family relationship that left them without a place to stay. But if you ask a mom how she fell into homelessness, her story might sound something like this.
Originally, it started when I divorced my ex-husband. And from there, it just kind of went back and forth, got into an apartment, wasn't able to pay rent, got into another apartment, went from an ex that was a drug addict, led to, again, being homeless, got into another apartment, just kind of bounced back and forth. Luckily, I've never had to camp out or sleep on the street. I've been in a couple of shelters. I've been in domestic violence shelters. I have experienced domestic violence quite a few times. I'm not the smartest, I guess, when it comes to choosing men.
This is Keely, a young mother.
I am 33, and I am originally from Florida. I've been in Utah for, a little over 20 years.
With five kids.
I have a 17-year-old, I have a 12-year-old, an 8-year-old, 4, and a 2-year-old. They're just all over. My 17-year-old acts like he's 2, my 2-year-old acts like she's 17. It's chaotic.
Keely's been in between housing and homelessness for 16 years and is one of the women that was featured in a report released in December by Crossroads Urban Center. The study surveyed 77 mothers, ages 21 to 50, who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. Between them, the mothers cared for 202 children, and 91% of the mothers had become homeless after experiencing a crisis, such as domestic violence or a health emergency. I met Keely at Palmer Court, a permanent supportive housing development where she stays with two of her children. We talked about what it was like for her to secure a place at Palmer Court and about her experience as a mother in an unstable living situation.
I've been on the waiting list for 5 years. I don't know how, but they lost my paperwork at one point, so I kind of was on a standstill, and they got my paperwork in order, and I've been here now for almost 2 years.
Tell me a bit about what it's like to live here. What's your apartment like? What are the different amenities like? Maybe I see a playground out the window here. So tell me a bit about that.
The apartment is nice. There are flaws. There's a family side and a single side. Well, there's supposed to be. There is a playground. There's been altercations between families and singles, or singles and singles, and families and families. I guess it's to be expected. I guess every apartment complex has its flaws to some extent, but here I feel like things could change a little bit. There's a lot of drug activity, a lot of alcohol involvement, just a lot of things that I think could change.
What kind of changes would you like to see?
As far as property management goes, they need to be involved a little bit more and listen to, like, the complaints that the tenants make. I don't know, be a little bit more involved. Just listen to what we are saying. Handle it a little bit more, handle it better than they do.
Does this place have everything you need to take care of your kids and yourself, like access to public transit, access to a grocery store?
Yeah, for the most part it does. They offer rides a couple times a week to, like, grocery stores and Bishop's Warehouse. There's a Bishop across the street that is just for Palmer Court, which is awesome. They help you with like food orders, clothing orders, laundry tokens. So that's a good thing. They offer rides to like Smith's and Reams and Walmart. And so for the most part, it's pretty good. We're right on the bus line. Tracks is a couple blocks away, so it's pretty handy.
Your kids are all basically school age, it sounds like. Is there a school nearby where they can go to school? Or, I mean, I know growing up, kids have a lot of different needs, you know, access to school. But do they feel normal growing up here?
I only have two kids that live with me full time here, and they go to Head Start. So Head Start is on campus, just down the hall from my apartment. So, I mean, yeah, it's accessible.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your day-to-day routine. I was thinking back to when my siblings and I were children, and my own mom's routine was pretty much set in stone daily. I mean, wake the kids up, make lunches, take us to school, and then she'd do work around the house. What does a typical day look like for you?
Sounds about like my day. I get up in the morning, get the kids ready for school, get them to school, come back home, depending on my day, appointments, whatever, clean up the house, go to my appointments, come home, get the kids from school, there's a couple hours, make dinner, get them for a bath, hang out with them for a few hours, get them ready for bed, and that's typical day.
Sounds pretty normal, but I mean, it's got to be different than other moms' experiences. So I'm wondering what the biggest barriers are to you for getting into a more stable living situation for you and your kids.
Income, evictions, most of all, it's income.
Do you have a job right now?
I'm unable to work. So right now I just receive financial. I'm in the process of waiting on a court date for Social Security. So I'm not working.
You can't work, which means you basically just have to rely on government aid. I don't know. What kind of position does that put you in?
A tight position. I mean, I have to budget really, really hard. And I have to watch what I spend. I have to account for every penny. So it's hard.
You said while you were describing your day that you've got different appointments. Have you been working with a caseworker? And what other services have you utilized?
I work with a caseworker here. I attend therapy once a week. I have doctor's appointments that I have to attend on a regular basis.
Do you feel that the service providers you've worked with understand your situation and needs?
To a point, but not really. It's kind of hard.
What do you think they're missing?
I don't think they understand all the way, like, how I feel on a day-to-day basis.
How do you feel on a day-to-day basis?
Stressed. It's really hard to get my point all the way across. I have social anxiety, so a lot of times I shut down because it's hard for me to explain how I feel.
Maybe you can talk a little bit about special and specific concerns that you have for yourself as a woman and a mother experiencing homelessness.
There's a lot of safety issues that I have living here. I think that there should be a side for families and a side for singles. There's a lot of barriers between those two that create a lot of chaos. So I think there should be like separate buildings. That's like the biggest concern.
Just safety, yeah. Even here in your own space.
Yeah, that's a huge concern.
What do you think people on the outside looking in don't understand about your situation?
I think they look at us like we're different, that we are lower than them, but we're not. Just because we don't have a lot of money doesn't mean that we're different. it doesn't make us any less of a person. We're still the same person.
Keely has been working with Dita Seed from Crossroads Urban Center to create a group called Powerful Moms Who Care. It's made up of mothers at Palmer Court, and they have a list of concerns and a list of actionable items to improve their own and their children's quality of life, as well as to help other homeless mothers. At the top of the list, of course, is safety.
Families and singles need to feel safe. Like I just said, different buildings, permanent supportive housing. I think the singles and the families need different buildings, different entries, just to feel safe on both ends. Healthcare and dental, just to have affordable care. I don't think we need to be pregnant or whatever just to have affordable healthcare or dental, to have therapy when needed. We need to have around-the-clock childcare so that we can have jobs that last longer than 3 or 5 o'clock. We need more low-income housing that we can have for minimum wage workers that make $7.25 or more an hour. We need to have more options for recovery issues for addicts. We need detox programs for people without insurance so that those people can get the help that they need. And just more options for people that can't afford things out of pocket.
So Dita, Keely was talking a little bit about separating single people from families here at Palmer Court. And just going back to the Crossroads Urban Center study, it features a very specific population. So maybe you can kind of talk about how the needs of mothers experiencing homelessness and families that are here at Palmer Court differ from, you know, the single men and single women without children in the community.
Well, this is what I've learned from working with the moms group that Keely's part of. They call themselves Powerful Moms Who Care. The Powerful Moms have been talking a lot about the challenges that single folks at Palmer Court experience, which are different from the kinds of things that the families are going through. And the two populations do, according to the moms, end up in confrontation more often than anyone would like. So they are really firm on their recommendation, which is included in the Crossroads report, that we need more permanent supportive housing like Palmer Court for families, separate, just as we need more for singles. I mean, permanent supportive housing really is a very helpful thing for people, but mixing families and singles isn't always helpful.
Keely, can you maybe explain that a little more? What is the issue having families and single people in the same space?
Singles don't always know how to handle people with children. So there's a lot of confrontation about control your kids or get your kids away from me. And there's a lot of issues with some of the singles looking at children inappropriately. So it's a tough situation.
Dita, going back to the report, the number one recommendation is to establish another family shelter other than the Midvale shelter with on-site childcare. But just looking at, you know, the state and Salt Lake County and Salt Lake City's plan for addressing homelessness, there won't be a need for another shelter once the new homeless resource centers are built and there's more affordable housing that's come online. But that makes me think then that you might be worried that by the time the Road Home is slated to close in 2019, there won't be enough affordable housing available for these families. Is that kind of what you're sensing here?
That's exactly right. The county's new model for addressing homelessness is already operational with regard to families. So there are no plans for another family shelter yet. The family shelter at Midvale is so full, they're having to put families in motels. And it's not likely that that situation is going to get any better in a year and a half. So we do need another shelter space for families, or we need to prepare ourselves to spend inordinate sums on the motel program. And the problem with the motel program is that people get placed in isolated units. They're away from case management. They're away from childcare. Frequently, people don't have transportation, and so they're set in these hotels and kind of left there. And that's not very helpful. And it's very expensive. And so our argument is, well, let's build or create the right kind of shelter. And this time, let's have childcare on site, because the problem with the Midvale shelter is that there is not any childcare. They have case management there, which is awesome. But with childcare, the moms that I talked to expressed the fact that they would be able to do a lot more in terms of stabilizing their situation if they had help with childcare. And that's a huge theme that came up over and over in everyone I talked to practically.
Well, one of the new resource centers is supposed to be designated for single women. Does that not take into account single mothers?
No, that's just single women. That's not families. So there's no provision for more shelter for families. The low-income housing crisis is continuing unabated. There's no end in sight. Salt Lake City has finally, and we're very grateful for this, agreed to build some new affordable housing. But that's going to take a while, and that's not, you know, we're not going to have all those units online in a year and a half. So we've got some pretty serious problems to address. And, you know, the thing that is really clear in all the conversations that I've had with moms is that we're talking about a lot of kids here. The 77 moms that we interviewed in the report had 202 kids. And we have to ask as a society, you know, how are we going to care for those children? Are we going to just let them flounder, or are we going to create housing their parents can afford and give them some stability?
So I asked Keely about giving a voice to these women. With the completion of this report, have you helped identify any potential advocates within the homeless community who can address their own needs?
The group that Keely is a leader in, Powerful Moms Who Care, is a group of formerly homeless moms living at Palmer Court, and they are coming up with recommendations, identifying problems and then identifying solutions. And you should ask her about what we plan to do in a couple weeks.
So we are planning on writing Erin,
that's Erin Mendenhall, Salt Lake City Council member,
a invitation to come to our group and just kind of listen to what goes on in our group and see if maybe she would like to join and see what we have to say.
What do you hope comes from this? I mean, this is a huge effort on behalf of the state and the county and the city, and they definitely have their own plan in mind, but that might not take into account your hopes.
Well, we're hoping that she'll come. This is a letter that says that she agrees with everything that has been going on, like everything that has been said lately. So we're hoping that she agrees to come to the group and sit in and kind of listen.
So to be clear, she wrote a letter endorsing the recommendations that we made. So we're pretty excited about that. And the Powerful Moms group is brand spanking new. So we're hoping to take the message to elected officials. I mean, that's, you know, what Keely's talking about. So one by one, we want to educate them, right? In a lot of the documents that have been created with regard to the issue of homelessness, there are sections that say, and we want to hear from people who have the lived experience of homelessness. So that's what we're bringing now to the table, because that voice has been missing. And moms have a particularly unique and important perspective.
That was Dita Seed from Crossroads Urban Center and Keely from the group Powerful Moms Who Care. You know that growing collection of plastic grocery bags you have in your kitchen? The ones you saved because you know you shouldn't throw them in the trash, but you're also not sure if you can recycle them?
You can't. When they enter into the recycling factory, they actually, it's like putting gum into the machine. So a lot of people just throw their plastic bags in the recycling, being very well-intentioned, but it's causing a lot more harm than good to the recycling process. So this is, instead of recycling, we're upcycling these bags so they can be much better utilized, not only within the community for our communities of homeless individuals, but also just decreasing our direct impact on the earth.
That's Michaela Lehman, a University of Utah Service Scholar. She's part of a project the university's Benyon Community Service Center is working on, repurposing those grocery bags into plarn, or plastic yarn, to be woven into sleeping mats for Utah's homeless. It's not only a push for sustainability, but it's also a student-led effort to lend a hand to people experiencing homelessness. U of U student Caitlin McLean initiated the project, called Bags to Beds, last October, and has applied for nonprofit status to continue the project throughout the year. Bags to Beds co-founder Austin Waters, a student in health society and policy, says it's a way for students to get involved in a persistent local issue.
So I think the idea was that even now, people sleeping on the street freeze to death every year. There are a couple people that die every single year. And with next coming winter, with the closure of the Road Home and the new homeless resource centers opening, they're going to lose like a couple hundred beds. And so the idea, we're going to try to hopefully mitigate a little bit, give people a little bit more warmth and a little bit more comfort, do what we can with not being in positions of power and still being students, but trying to do something with like the new tide that's coming, I guess.
While most of the campus was quiet during winter break, students and staff filled the Benyon Center to volunteer at the Plarn Party. The mat making is a bit of a process. First, all the air needs to be flattened out of the bags.
So you're flattening out the bags right now.
Yes, I am.
This is all part of the process.
Yep. It's the very start, just finding them all nice and flat so we can turn them into yarn.
Then the bags are folded, cut, and tied into longer pieces of plastic. The chains of plastic are then rolled into a ball, just like a ball of yarn, and anywhere from 400 to 700 bags are crocheted into a 3x6-foot mat. There are a few benefits to using the plastic bags. They're easy to clean, they're lightweight, and they don't house bugs. But during Utah's colder months, Benyon Center Administrative Assistant Debbie Hare says the Plarn mats really show their worth.
The Plarn will give you a little insulation layer when you sleep on the ground. There's little pockets between the stitches of the mat, and that holds your body heat. So if you're having to sleep on the ground, that will give you a little bit of cushion, but more importantly, it will give you a warmth layer between you and the ground.
The students have 4 mats ready to deliver to the Road Home and hope to have 100 mats ready by next Thanksgiving. In the meantime, though, the Benyon Center continues to accept your plastic grocery bags, and if you have an extra hour to give, perhaps you might try your hand at plarning at the Benyon Center's next Plarn Party. With the new year just beginning, how do you think Utah is doing when it comes to homeless issues? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can catch all the In the Hive podcasts at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.